You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
I do not have a vagina. And he does not have a penis.
We
don't have genitals.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I have
another week, another movie,
another trail of tears.
We're doing it. We're almost done.
Well, we're getting there.
Almost.
Welcome to Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott. That's Joey. And today is Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, yes.
Or otherwise known as Shemp Ruins Everything.
How did DiCaprio get talked into just being slack? I don't know, the whole slack job.
Doing Shemp?
Pretty much.
I can see why he wasn't nominated. You can't win an Oscar for doing Shemp face for 4 hours. No.
Well, 3.5, but close enough.
Yeah, I'm rounding up. I'm allowed.
In order to round up, you have to cross the 3.5 hour mark.
I'm not arguing.
That's how rounding works.
I'm rounding up. Sorry.
You're doing it wrong.
Anyway, no. No, the film did it wrong.
Listen. Scorsese, the man knows how to make a movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll give you that.
I mean, he knows how to do it, but it just seems his choices of what he's making are, the Academy loves it. They eat it up. They're like, this movie talks about important subject matter, and you know, it's historical. And I haven't read the book, and I'm not 100% sure how accurate it is. But
I did some research. I did some research to the accuracy. There's not really too much that the touch on that.
Okay.
We'll touch on it briefly.
But the thing of it is, it's like the man knows what the hell he's doing. The problem is, at this point in my life, I would really like him to do something else.
I posit that this is Scorsese's "I don't want to be remembered as the gangster lover" move.
But this is basically a gangster movie.
That's the problem. I had a rant on the film before I ever saw it because of what I read, and basically the book was a like a true crime format. You know, you follow the detective, right. Meth Damon, who figures out what's going on.
I love that. I actually just referred to him recently. I was talking about another thing that he did at a friend's, and it was a group of us, and I called him Meth Damon. They're like, wow, yeah, Meth Damon.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So according to the interviews or things I've read, Scorsese, in talking with the daughter of the actual husband and wife, the Indian and, you know, Eckhart Shem.
Yeah.
She felt that it should be a love story, that it was focusing too much on the crime. So Scorsese has said what he did is he rewrote the entire film. I disagree. I think he just wrote an addition to the film and added it on. He decided to try to make it a love story, but it's not.
Right.
And in saying he didn't want to follow the White character of the FBI agent who solves everything, you know, the White Savior kind of situation, he instead of following the Indian, he follows the White guy who killed a bunch of the Indians.
Well, didn't actually kill anyone, just, you know, lined it up.
He was involved. He
He lined it up. He was directly responsible.
You're still a murderer.
Well, yeah, yeah. He was directly responsible. Well, killing someone and having someone killed.
He was injecting his wife with poison.
Yes, at the at the direction of his uncle, who, by the way, De Niro is essentially just doing a really old Max Cady from Cape Fear. That is. I'm not saying he is Max Cady from Cape Fear, but his tone and the delivery of some of his lines sounded a lot like Max Cady. That southern kind of twang to it. And maybe it's just because De Niro's doing it and he has played both characters. Mm-hmm. I had definitely
Southern.
A little Max Cady in there.
Sure.
Anyhow.
Yeah, I mean, let's not split hairs. I had the same problem with this film that I had with Maestro. Why am I following an unsavory person for the entire length of this film?
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
You know what's interesting about this movie? Is in a movie format, it's long. It's really long. It's a three-hour and 28-minute film. It's a really long movie. Yeah. Right. It's a really long film. There's a lot that goes on. I mean, the FBI agent doesn't show up until, hour two? Like, there's another hour and a half left in the movie, but 2 hours before he even shows up. That's how long this fucking movie is.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the whole film takes place over the course of several years during which all this mass murder occurred.
Right.
And its starting point is with Ernest Burkhart returning home from World War I after having served as a cook, and him immediately joining the family under King Hale and taking jobs for him, and it quickly shows us that he's like a simple nice guy, but at the same time he's just a hellion or a rapscallion.
Hooligan. They actually in more than one scene talk about how he really loves money and he'll do just about anything for it.
Yeah, he's a very simple-minded person, but here's the thing too. Because he's setting this up as this kind of like love story, we follow him, we follow the whole romance, and that takes like a good hour by itself, interspersed with dead Indians and other stuff.
Right.
And it's my problem is like when the opening sequence, we follow Ernest to meet Hale, and then they spend 10 minutes talking, during which Hale gives away the whole game.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Eliminating any possible suspense, and it's like he's fighting against this film being a crime drama, but that's what it is. You can insert an hour of Indian love into it if you want. We can go to Indian heaven. What the fuck was that about? but you can't hide a crime drama, especially since you definitely noticed this. All the assassination scenes they show, they're all shot static from a distance, quiet, very much like scenes from The Godfather.
Yeah, and he actually kind of did that in The Irishman, too. It's the style that he's going towards these days.
And it's a smart style, too, because by making it a static shot, you're eliminating any art from it, and you're eliminating any manipulation of the audience. You're pretty much is giving them the scene, and having it uninterrupted is very impactful. The scenes work because of that.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a well-made film. It's not a bad film.
So here's the thing. This is the whole time. And tell me if you thought the same thing, and maybe you didn't. And when I say it, you'll be like, "Oh yeah," now that you mention it. This movie would play so much better if it was. excuse me. Sorry.
2 hours shorter? Yeah.
Well, no. Yes, but I think this would have worked great as a two-hour, maybe 30-minute movie at best. But this style of filmmaking, this style of storytelling would have worked really well if it was, let's say, a HBO or Netflix 5-6 part type scenario where where you can turn this into 5 or 6 hours, but it's a mini series now. You know, I think it would have been digested much easier than that, than this. Even though this is, like you said, a well-made film.
Yeah, I'll go one better.
No arguing that.
And I know you know what I'm going to say, or you've heard this from me before. Just do a documentary.
They have a documentary. It's separate from this movie.
Good. Then there's no reason to have a fictionalized account. When you have a fictionalized account and you're trying to like just stay that true to the history, just fucking do the documentary.
But listen, I really feel strongly about that. But there's almost always a documentary companion to all of these things.
Yeah, then just don't make them.
Well, listen. You know, maybe you don't want to watch the film, but there are people that want to watch the film and then, crap, I want to see this documentary now because they're going to tell me even more stuff, you know, or it's going to be even more accurate. Having a documentary as a companion is definitely not looked down upon. It is like,
That's an economic advertising. I'm not talking about that kind of stuff. I'm talking about the art.
I know you are.
Okay.
But all I'm saying is people want the documentary too.
Okay.
They don't want one or the other. They want both.
Yeah, I don't care what they want. Really?
I know you don't.
Even though I disagree with having Eckert as the main character,
right?
And I really have a problem. I mean, the mystery, and I understand the mystery behind this couple is that. Why is she, you know, how does she not suspect? Why is she staying with him? And why is he doing this? But he's not a complicated character. He's a simple character.
Right.
Very simple.
Yeah.
There's no mystery of like, why is he doing this? No, he's an idiot. I'm following the escapades of an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the film, Escapades of an Idiot. It's just, and then, they do give the Osageman a decent time. He gives them enough time. I appreciate that, but I really feel like if this was a story of if he was worried about following the white man, he shouldn't have done this because he just fell back into his Godfather role. And in the second half of the film is all it's Godfather. Like the only
Scorsese didn't direct.
That's the only big shake.
You know Scorsese didn't do the Godfather, right?
I'm sorry. I meant like Goodfellas, stuff like that. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. Okay. I meant the gangster films. He started off doing Mean Streets. I took Scorsese class. I know Scorsese. Boxcar Bertha. I've been through all the fucking films.
Yeah.
I watched Raging Bull so many goddamn times, and I didn't like it. So yeah, I'm familiar. So he has a tendency to glorify the criminal element in his films.
Very much so. He centializes on violence and has been for over 50 mm-hmm. years.
Taxi Driver.
60
Yeah, almost. Taxi Driver. I mean, now there was a mysterious character. There was somebody we couldn't understand. That was a strange. And so, I mean, he kind of combined Taxi Driver with Goodfellas, and it just, seriously, it's instead of the charismatic character, we're following the wackadoo. Except he's just stupid.
I am not a smart man. What is your opinion? Yes, go ahead. What is my opinion on what?
I loved Leonardo's performance. Don't get me wrong. You just can't get over Shemp face.
It's there. Even his hair, the way it parts, it's weird part.
And it makes sense for the character.
Yeah.
But again, it's just after 3 hours of it, I just can't take it anymore. What are your thoughts on the ending?
We're going to jump right to the ending. Okay.
Unless you want something else to talk about. I'm sorry.
No. Listen, we're trying to keep these episodes in a bite-sized type manner. The ending. So the film...
I'm talking the transition to the radio show for the wrap up.
Yeah, I was gonna say what I was gonna lead up to is that they talk about
sorry.
No, they talk about how at the end, like, you know, he goes on trial and he gives up his uncle, and then they start talking, and then it materializes or transitions into a like a radio or live audience broadcast that is being transferred over radio and is acted out, sound effects, '50s style. And then Scorsese reads the last part of it and then fades to black.
Right. He basically replaced what they would normally do with titles saying what happened and like pictures of the original people. Right. They replaced that and went for this old timey thing.
I actually dug it. I thought it was kind of neat because they didn't go with the title cards of what happened and video and pictures and things like that. It's like you just watched a 3.5-hour movie and you got this tiny little bit of storytelling in a much different way, which I thought worked. I don't know if I would have had Scorsese read the last bit and fade to black. I don't think I would have made that decision, but he did, so it was fine. I think I would have picked somebody else entirely for that.
I have my theory. I agree with you. I did like it, and I did like it. It was original, and it was a nice replacement of the typical title cards and pictures.
Right.
But I feel like there's an ulterior motive.
Okay.
And the ulterior motive for that entire scene was just so Scorsese could read her obituary, Molly Burkhart's obituary.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, sure.
This movie was a giant selfie for Scorsese to read her biography and see the tear forming in his eye.
I mean,
so you remember that he's not just about the gangster films.
But you just watched the gangster movie.
That's what I'm saying, though. So it's about her. The fact that he's made the film, it's supposed to be about her.
Yeah.
But he has himself reading it. You're making it about you.
Let me.
He made it about him.
Let me ask you something. Let's go back about half an hour. Brendan Fraser's character, when he comes on screen.
Oh, Jesus. That scared me, yeah.
But I didn't feel like it fit.
No.
I don't know.
It fell out.
Everything leading up to him just being like immediately boisterous felt like I hate to say it because I like Brendan Fraser so much.
I think you should be da bomb and this is how you should act and ha-ha.
Yeah.
He was very there's a couple of scenes.
I hate to say that. No, I'm sorry. I hate to say this because I loved his performance in The Whale and that was a very well-deserved best actor win, but it just felt like, and he hadn't won the best actor Oscar when he did Killers of the Flower Moon, because I remember he was on Howard Stern talking about The Whale and promoting it and talking about how he had just finished doing Killers of the Flower Moon for Scorsese and the Oscars hadn't happened yet. So this was before. This wasn't, even though he won the Oscar and then Killers of the Flower Moon came out later, it was filmed before he won the Oscar. So I felt, and I hate to say it because I like him so much and I like this performance in The Whale, it felt like a lot of overacting for such a small role.
Well, and blame the director because the director guided the acting.
Yeah.
I don't blame him at all.
Stupid boy. It's like,
when you shoehorn a romance into a crime drama, you know, shit happens. And yeah, I agree with, there's a couple of scenes that don't really fit in the film well. That one, the Indian Heaven. I was like, why am I seeing her walk into the afterlife? I get it filmic wise, but this is like a gritty crime drama. If you're gonna make the Indian film, make the Indian film. You know?
Yeah.
Make up your fucking mind. So as far as factually, the film is very, very close to factually accurate. There's like very few deviations. One major one is the whole scene in the Mason temple, the Freemason temple.
Okay.
That does not happen. He did not spank
him.
He was a Freemason, but he didn't like drag him into a room and spank him with a paddle. That's all Scorsese. And for me, that's right up there with his weird, like, again, Taxi Driver. The only part of that film that he wrote, he inserted in that film, against the scriptwriter's wishes, was the scene where
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster is dancing with Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
And that's the only scene in the film that takes place without Travis Bickle there, because that's not supposed to be in there. And he wanted that in there to show that Travis Bickle was a threat, but that the pimp wasn't. And it's he projects these little morality scenes in some of his films, and I really got that same feeling from the paddling scene. This was him just trying to make sure, he's trying to drive home the point that Eckard really doesn't have a choice in what he's doing. He's trying to drive the morality of the character with this isolated scene, and I didn't like it. I thought it was stupid.
I could take her to leave it, to be honest.
Yeah. But again, I mean, I didn't hate this anywhere. I didn't hate this at all, and I definitely didn't dislike it as much as I disliked The Painter. I just didn't...
The Painter?
Fucking... The Irishman.
The Irishman, yeah.
I hear you paint houses.
Yes.
I'm right.
So, you know what's interesting?
See, I pay attention.
I know you do. So, Netflix is known for taking long movies and chopping them up. So, like, for instance, Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. They chopped that up into like five parts.
Fucking ridiculous.
Four. Yeah, it's four, right? And it was like 40-minute or so, like, chapters.
Yeah.
And they released it kind of like a miniseries. I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Netflix did this. Well, actually, this is Apple TV. But Apple TV might take a little page out of Netflix's notebook and do it to this movie. If they didn't do it already. I have no idea. I never looked it up.
Especially if, like Tarantino, Scorsese has a lot of extra footage laying around.
Yeah.
That's how they were able to do that for Netflix. They approached him. He's like, oh, yeah, I got extra footage. So if Scorsese planned ahead that way, you never know. We might have, like, a six-hour version of this film.
Dear God.
Where's my director's cut of Heaven's Gate?
Five-hour cut. Well, Cimino's dead, right? Or is he still alive?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, he's gone.
Well, then what the hell is United Artists waiting for? Or whoever owns United Artists at this point. Who is that now? Is it Paramount? I don't know.
I don't know.
Somebody bought United Artists. I don't remember who it was.
So I'm not shitting on the film. It was a good film, good performances. De Niro, I don't know. I felt like he kind of walked through it. But, I mean, what else are you going to do with the character? He's supposed to be a comfortable character.
Yeah.
John Lithgow surprised me. That was he got old. This whole film was like, oh, shit, he got old.
Well, it's funny you should say that. MGM bought United Artists. I should know that, actually. But when I saw John Lithgow in the film, I was like, I thought the opposite. I'm like, yeah, he's older, but he really hasn't changed much at all.
Well, I'm currently rewatching Third Rock from the Sun with Holly, which, you know, was in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it's a jarring for me. I'm like watching him, and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, that's all I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not... I know people are aging. I'm just not aware of it until I see them, and it's shocking. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah. But again, it's not a bad film. I think it actually deserved to be one of the five nominees. It is it's an epic. It's made to be an epic film. It's, you know, as long as it is, it's as big as it is. It's capable. It's a decent film. I wasn't bored or angry throughout the film. I just had my problems here and there.
Yeah. It's nominated for 10 Oscars. And we'll go over that real quick right now.
Yep.
And I actually agree with this very first one, score. I really like the score for this.
Oh, that's what I wanted to say real quick. That was one thing I noticed. I rarely notice scores. And this score I noticed because there are a lot of scenes where there's nothing happening.
And the music.
But they have that quick... But yes. It's quick tempo. It's like he's the or that
it's
that,
moving that, it along, even though a lot of nothing is happening. Yeah.
There are certain scenes where that soundtrack was the only thing keeping me engaged.
Yeah, I love the score for this movie.
Yeah, I'm all in for this for best score. I agree with you.
Yeah, no, I thought the score was fantastic for this. There was even a part in one of the score like one of the music where I'm like, that's a Cream song. And I was like, I bet Scorsese's like, you know, do a little Cream, but, you know, low key. all right, so original score. And then it says here, achievement in original song. There's a song called the Wazhazi, a song mm-hmm. for my people. So that got nominated for best song. Mm-hmm. Best picture, best director, best actress in a leading role, Lily Gladstone, which, by the way, I think is probably the winner. I think she's walking away with this Oscar. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role, De Niro, which...
No,
he's not going to win it. I don't even know if he deserves to be nominated, to be honest.
No.
But he's definitely not winning. Cinematography, Scorsese's guy always gets nominated, or the people he uses always get nominated. Because like Scorsese or not, he's got a really good eye.
I actually think that Leonardo should have been nominated for holding the Shemp face for the whole film. That's fucking hard.
Film editing. I would say film editing is definitely something this movie did well. Production design. It's a period piece. They always tend to get nominated. And costume design. Also, again, period piece. What does it walk away with? Guaranteed, I think it walks away with best actress. Everything else is a crapshoot.
I agree, 100%.
So.
Did he win director recently?
Scorsese won Best Picture and Director for The Departed in 2006.
Right, okay, which I liked. It was a good film.
I liked it a lot, too.
Yeah, yeah. Even with the accents, I was able to get through the accents. So that's how good it was.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? If I'll touch on that just for a brief minute.
Uh-oh.
That's not his best movie. It's a great film by him, but the Academy's like, listen, we have not given Scorsese a Best Picture or Director Oscar.
Don't care.
No. You know how I am with this. It's like we have not done that, and this is as good a film as any to give it to him for. So let's do that. Even though his best film was definitely not The Departed. Was it a great film? Yeah. Is his best? Absolutely not. So,
I say give him a Lifetime Achievement Award as long as he promises to stop criticizing superhero films.
They keep asking him.
Please stop asking.
Well, they're never going to stop asking him because they know they want to get the answer that he's going to give.
No one gives a shit. No one gives. When he makes a superhero film, then ask him how he feels about superhero films.
I'd love to see a Scorsese superhero
ask movie. Ask him how he feels about Christmas romance films on Lifetime. Should they make more of those, or should they? Or should we just be making nothing but what he fucking makes? See, just don't. Sorry. 7.7 on IMDb.
Yes.
It's too long.
It is too long.
And I disagree with his approach of trying to turn it into a romance. I think it's a muddled mess because of it. Yeah. Even though it still works, it doesn't work as good as it could have.
See, this is if you could give half scores, this is a perfect 7.5 in my opinion.
Well, it's 7.7 now, so yeah.
No, I know, but I think this movie really should be in the 7.5 range. But I don't think it's good enough for an 8. And it certainly shouldn't get anything lower than a 7. So,
I'm easy on it. If you wanted to talk me into 8, I'm sure I'd be fine with it. 7 is good for me.
Well, here, let's think about what we've given an 8. You know, we've given.
Hold on, I will bring up my chart.
Let's do this rationally. What have we given an 8? And let's see if this is better than what, or as good as what we've given an 8.
Getting it right now. Hold on. I haven't updated it for the last few films, but we know we gave high marks to Holdovers and American Fiction.
Yes.
So those were at least 8.
Those were both
8s. I wanted to give Holdovers a 10, but you wouldn't let me.
No, you wanted to give Barbie a 10. I wanted to give Holdovers a 9, and you didn't want to do it because we gave American Fiction an 8. And you felt that American Fiction
I felt guilty
should probably be guilty. A 9 if Holdovers is a 9.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, you're right. Hold on. Let me sort this. Stop. All right. So I haven't confirmed all the ratings we've given on the show. So this is only a sampling. Okay.
Okay.
We gave Elvis, as far as Oscar films, we gave Elvis 8. We gave Tar 8. We gave All Quiet 8. We gave Green Room 8. I feel like we should knock that down to 7.
Green
we
Room.
Gave Barbarian Green, and Hellraiser.
Green Room is 8. Not an Oscar movie.
Green Room?
No, you're thinking of Green Book.
Same thing.
wait a minute. Hold on. I have to touch on this, even if it's for only 10 seconds. Green Room is about a punk rock band that goes into the fucking lion's den of Nazis. And Green Book...
I misread it. I misread it. I'm
Green
sorry.
Book is...
Yeah, I misread it. I had Green Book on the brain.
Yeah, Green Room absolutely deserves its 8. Telling
oh, no,
right
yes,
now.
Yes. Again, I was thinking Green Book, sorry. Okay. Prey, Coda, Dune, Nightmare Alley, Power of the Dog, Wolf of Snow Hollow, Promising Young Woman. These are all 8s.
Prey is not an Oscar movie, though.
No, these are just 8s. I said a lot of them.
Oh, these are 8s. Gotcha. Okay.
God damn it, man.
Sorry.
Like The Father, Trial of Chicago 7, Judas the Black Messiah,
yeah.
Black Klansman.
Let's go 8.
We get them all 8s.
Let's go 8. The movie is it's for what it is. It's well made enough that it probably should deserve an 8.
I'll be fair. Despite my dissatisfaction with certain aspects of the film and the point that I will never watch it again.
Mare was supposed to watch it with me, but I told her, I said, I need to watch this for Thursday night, and she's like, oh, but I really want to see it. I go, well, I need to watch it tonight, and she's like, no, I'll watch it. I'm like, then don't complain. You can't complain. So I'm probably gonna have to watch it a second time.
Holly watched the first hour and a half and the last half hour with me.
Okay, it's 2 hours. That's 2/3.
Yeah, she had to go do stuff, but you know she came back.
It was still on.
Yeah.
She started it, left to go do stuff, came back, still on. That's how long this fucking movie is.
Yeah, way too long. So
I mean, Scorsese is doing that now. His movies are not; they're 3.5 hours. That's the average time.
Well, they're fucking epics. Again, these guys, they hit the $1 billion mark, or they become the superstar mark, and then it's like, oh, everything I do is gold. Everyone, people deserve 4 hours of my film. Jesus, fucking dial it back a bit, you know?
Well. I mean,
I think there should be a rule. I think they should, like, if they have every other film, they should have half the budget of the previous film, and then they can double again.
Yeah.
Do a small film, do a big film. We're not giving you $200 million every time you fucking sneeze. Do something small, you know? Those are the directors that have fucking range and talent. Give me $200 million, I'll do something. I'll get a 5. Yeah, I could easily get 5 stars.
Yeah, that's true.
No, just show us your talent without fucking just. I'm sorry. I'll stop ranting. Sorry. Anyway, decent film, Killers of the Flower Moon, 8 stars, but not going to win Best Picture.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. All right, I guess we're good. We can move on.
Yeah. I think we should wrap up.
I think we should do that.
I think we've said our piece.
I think we did. Peace, yo. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Movie Sucktastic. Go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. Download or listen or watch the show there. You can go to iTunes.com and listen to the show there as well. Go to Facebook.com/moviesucktastic, and you can just see whatever we post. Usually it's movie-related in some way, entertainment-related. You can leave us email, themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com, or you can leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. You can download our podcast app at moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, or just go and download your favorite podcast player for your device and just do a search for Movie Sucktastic. We are in there. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Coyote like money.
You call me a coyote. I don't know what you just said, but it must have been handsome devil. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next time when we review Anatomy of a Fall.
Ah!
Yeah. Oh, I got a story about that, so... All right, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.